The following is a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mulman Media Management and staff.
Hello, welcome. This is Joe Poe and Mary Helen Deere hosting Kiowa Talk, created by the late J.T. Goombay. Our sponsors for Kiowa Talk here on Saturday on New Country 985 KACO Apache are Kiowas for a Better Future, District 5 Legislator Anita Johnson, District 7 Legislator Jacob Sotai, Susan Campbell, Kiowa Citizen, and Lawrence Spotted Bird, Kiowa Citizen. Now we'll have Jacob Sotai will give the opening prayer for the show. Jacob, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Joe.
Well, great. Well, go ahead. You have the prayer is yours.
All righty. Let's pray. Ahodok E, Creator, we come before you humbly, asking your blessings on our lives, thanking you for this refreshing rain you have sent to us, and asking that it might cleanse our physical being, and help us to acknowledge all that you give to us in so many ways. We ask you now for healing blessings on those who are in need, those who are in hospitals or nursing homes. We ask you to watch over them. Be with our people who are in need of your presence through food, through compassion, through services that might be available to them, help them find their way through this life. We ask you to be with our elders, watch over, protect them, keep them safe so that they continue to be a presence in our lives. Be with all those who are being marginalized today, those incarcerated, those who are hungry, those who are seeking shelter, help them to be able to meet the challenges that confront them on a daily basis. We ask you to give the leadership of our tribe so that they can focus on the issues that are of great importance to our people. Keep our minds open, our hearts filled with compassion to be able to serve our people in a good way. We ask you to forgive us if we have not reflected your light in our lives. Be with us always. Aho.ki. Deone.ki. Amen.
Thanks, Jacob, for that. And now we'll go ahead and move on to the next part of the show, which is our Kiowa Elder of the Week, which is Jimmy Hokiva Wolf. Mary Helen, you want to go ahead and start?
Good morning, Jimmy.
Morning.
How long have you been away from home?
Oh, from home, from Oklahoma. I've been gone almost all my life. I've been working quite a bit. I worked for the BIA, and I went to work in Montana, Oregon, Sacramento, and I went a year in Washington, D.C. But I didn't like it there, so I was able to get my old job back in Oregon. So I got up there, and after 35 years, I retired there. And I'm still out in the West.
Yeah, my grandparents used to have a church I can't remember the name of the little community there, but near Klamath Falls. And he had the church there for 2 or 3 years. So we got to know some of the Klamath people there. So I don't know how far you are away from that community, but we're glad to have you on this morning. And we have a weekly interview with the elders just to get acquainted with them and to give our elders a chance to tell their life story and how you grew up. And so you might begin with telling us who your folks are and how you grew up.
On my father's side, he's the white people called my grandpa Hobeka, but the name is Hobehoa. We don't have a V sound in our language, so I don't know who gave us that. But my grandpa's name is Jack Hobeka Wolf, and that's where the wolf comes from. On my mother's side, I'm from the Poor Buffalo, Paw Tuttle. I grew up in Hobart. I didn't go to town until I started the school, because my birthday is in December. I couldn't start school until I reached my seven years, and then I caught pneumonia really bad, and that really tied me up because we didn't have any insurance. We didn't get out of the country. It was a horrible time. And I had an old lady, old lady Honigal. My dad went to get her, and she came over and she doctored me the old way with a cow horn.
Yeah.
And she pulled something out of my chest. Mm-hmm. And my dad always said she saved my life. And she probably did, because, you know, I didn't know that much about anything when I was growing up. But anyway, I was able to finish school there at Hobart. I played athletics, like I said earlier. I played athletics in football, basketball, baseball, and track. And I was able to put out a pretty good name for myself. I went to Oklahoma Panhandle State University on a football scholarship, and I had some pretty good luck there, too, because I set two national records. One, I scored 25 touchdowns in one season, and I scored 8 rushing touchdowns in one game. That, in 1958, that record hasn't been broken yet. It's been tied twice, once by a guy from Southwest Kansas, and another one from Illinois. But I'm kind of proud of that, because that's the only claim to fame I got, I guess. But I was drafted in 1959 by the Washington Redskins and the Houston Oilers out of the newly formed American Football League. And I signed a one-year free agency contract with the Redskins in 1960. Free agency means, you know, you don't get no money unless you play. And I was able to play, but I'd never played a down during the regular season. I was on backup, and eventually worked my way over to what we called a taxi squad back then. There was it amounted to live dummies, I guess. But anyway, I came back to Oklahoma in '61, and they started a couple of leagues there, and I played football till 62. I broke my collarbone, so I had to give it up. And I got the job with the BIA in 1959, I guess it was. No, 1960. I'm sorry. I started out in, I applied for a job in Anadarko, but the job was in Cleveland, Ohio. Well, I needed work, so I went to Cleveland, Ohio to work, and eventually came back to Anadarko and then went to Sacramento. I worked there with the there were about 100 different tribes, rancherias, as they call them in California.
Yeah.
And it's what was interesting about California was it was a non-treaty state. The United States acquired Mexico, acquired California from Mexico, so there were no land issues to deal with. And they started up the what they call a rancherias, and enticed some of the the different bands to move on a piece of land and pledge some kind of allegiance to the United States. But a lot of those, they didn't have title to those lands. It was government land, and it was interesting to deal with that. Then I was able to work in Billings, Montana, and I went to Portland, Oregon, and then went into D.C. for a year. But I didn't feel out of place. I was just an old country boy. So I went back to Oregon to get my old job back, and I worked there, finished, and retired there after 35 years. And still out west. I moved to Central Coast in Oregon, and I lived there since 1996. And then I just recently, 3 years ago, I moved from there to Northern California. And I lived there because of the weather. The weather started getting real bad along the coast, where it used to be just mild. And, of course, we don't have weather like Oklahoma. Tornadoes and ice storms.
Yeah.
So, but working with all the tribes, I worked in land, real estate services. I worked on reservation lands, tribal lands, individual allotments, and I tried to learn as much as I could about the reservation that I was going to work with so that I had some a knowledge of their history. And that was interesting for me because it also expanded my knowledge of what I was doing. And all the way down to why I was doing it, because a lot of these reservations were set up because of a treaty with a tribe. And I've retired there, like I say, after 35 years. But so I've kind of been away from Oklahoma for all those years, and while I was in Oklahoma, I did a lot of local stuff, playing ball, played a lot of softball. We played a lot of softball at one time in Oklahoma. Every tribe had some kind of a ball team, and it was a big thing there, playing softball. But that was mostly all I've ever did in my life was athletics. Mm-hmm. And now I'm at a point where when I walk, I'm 86 years old, and when I walk around, I have to use a walker, push a walker around, so it's a far cry from the way I used to be.
Yeah. Takes the toll.
I enjoyed working where I did because I worked with all the different tribes. Like there were in Oklahoma, I started out with the Kiowa, Comanche, Apache, Wichita, Delaware, Tonkawa, and Cheyenne, Arapaho. And then when I went to Sacramento, I worked with 100 different tribes. And that was interesting there because, like I say, there were a non-treaty tribe or a treaty state because of no land issues. And then I went to Montana and worked with 7 reservations there, but they were huge, 1 million, 2 million acres, with the Crow and the Blackfoot feet and Flathead, those tribes. Then I went to Oregon, and I had part of Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and those were interesting. Those tribes were. I got along real well with all the tribes, and I almost, when I retired, I almost was talked into consulting with them. And I thought, no, you know, I did what I had to do when I did, and I didn't want to prolong that anymore because that was sort of really on a personal gain if I did any consulting with them. So that didn't suit my taste. So I didn't pursue it.
Yeah. Well.
But
between your athletics part of your life and then your service with the government, what would you advise young people of today? Going to school and setting out into the world, what would your advice be to them?
Education. You just I can't say enough without education, you know. And fortunately for our tribe in Oklahoma, the Kiowas, there was a period when a lot of the Kiowas went to college and got a degree and came back as teachers.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was interesting because I theorized that, you know, we Indians, we were exposed to teachers, and we had some good teachers. They were our role models, I think. That's why I felt like a lot of those Kiowas got into education. They had a lot of educators. Yeah, it was. I think I had an interesting mind working with all the different tribes, and I got along with just about every one of them. Right now, I'm living up here among the Pitt River, and I'd always heard that those guys were really mean. But I some of them recognized me since I came up here because I worked in this area. Out of Sacramento, I covered all of Northern California, and then I got into what we call our area office for the BIA, and it covered the whole state of California. Mm-hmm. So we had some interesting places like Palm Springs. That city of Palm Springs is pretty well off, but the tribes, that's the city of Palm Springs is within the Agua Caliente reservation.
Uh-huh.
So anything that happens as far as construction of buildings and golf courses and hotels and all, they have to work with the tribe. And I thought that was interesting. That was a good mark for the tribe.
Yeah, there's different opportunities in different parts of the world, the country for Indian people. Well, Jimmy, we certainly have been interesting to talk with. We're coming to the end of our time here, and I'd like to talk to you again, so we may call on you in a month or so to continue your story. But thank you.
That'd be fine with me.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because I taught Kiowa. I ran out of people to talk with. My brother lives in Southern California, and we talk on the phone all the time. And when I grew up in Hobart with my folks, we all talk Kiowa. So, you know, I try to write some of the stuff in on my computer, but and I did it all by sound because we have some terrible sounds in our language.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of clicking sounds and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd sure be glad to do that again.
Okay. Well, thank you,
Jimmy. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day and being on our show and visiting with us and sharing your thoughts with our readers. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
All right. All right, everybody. That was Jimmy Wolf, and he lives up in Oregon now. So now we're going to go to the next part of the show, and we've got former Kiowa Director of Transportation Stephen Quitone on the phone with us, and he's got some things to share. Stephen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's actually an honor for me to be able to be invited to speak with y'all today.
Do you have some kind of beeping going on in the background?
I'm on my lunch break, luckily.
All right. So go ahead. I think that you're going to discuss your time as the transportation director and what happened with in the events that occurred when the dance ground was built and all of that, the events surrounding that time. And we'll just turn it over to you. Go ahead.
Okay, sure. I'll give you a brief history. Actually, this started back in 2008 when we actually put in a grant to build baseball diamonds for the children. I was once the director for the Kiowa Nation Sports Club that we formed in 1988 that serviced for children from 5 years old to 18 years old. Of course, we helped them get scholarships and so forth. Of course, you know, getting them all involved in athletics for health reasons. But long story short, we wanted to build a golf course on the former Buffalo grounds. Of course, that did not go through. The baseball fields did not go through. So when the Head Start Department got approved for a new school, we decided to put roads in to connect them. And so because they were going to tear out the bridge going across the river, and there was not going to be able to have a 4th of July powwow, we decided that we would, you know, request to put powwow grounds on top of the hill. So we got the former vice chairman and Charlie Eisenberger. We took him up. We showed him. We had already built the roads. And, of course, the former administration, they gave us the approval to start. That's why we had started building the roads. We'd started a lot of stuff. They just had no funds to fund it. So when we told Mr. Eisenberger what we had already started, he backed us. But there again, we still had no funding. So all we did was pretty much put in we put in tin horns for the drains. We put in the roads. And it was in September, I kept explaining to the former director that we needed to get this powwow grounds built because in the spring, we had two projects. We were going to build the Traders from Traders Restaurant just west of Anadarko to Stecker, as well as the Washita Road from 1 mile east of Apache Y to Washita. And so these two projects were going to keep our program alive. And it was a cooperative agreement between the Caddo County District 3 and, of course, you know, the Kiowa Tribe Transportation Department. But we were told to drop everything we were doing and build the powwow grounds. So they informed me in Mr. George Carter's office, Mr. Donnie Tope. I told me to drop everything we're doing and assist this new contractor, Luke Diego. And so we didn't really know what, you know, we were supposed to assist in doing. But when we put our proposal in, our proposal was $58,200. And this included a bathroom with showers and air conditioning, hot and cold water, and then a concession stand. And this was going to be built by the late Terry Ottone. and Autome Construction. The electrical was going to be done by Carl Barbo, who is a local. He's married to Kiowa Treisler UNAP. And then we already had Mr. Oscar Codapone working for the electric company. We had everything set up, you know, for our light poles. King Saab, we had already had everything set up with to have our grass put in, Western Aggregate for gravel, and then, of course, all, you know, everything was already in place. So when Mr. Luke Yeagle came in, I was informed to give him all my information. So he took my file and, well, I guess he took the lead from there. Really, I don't know what all he actually done. The transportation department is the one who built the powwow grounds. With we did have outside help, and these guys really did an outstanding job. Ace Yellowhair, Jackie Yellowhair, Von Autone, who was also our dozer operator, did an outstanding job. Brian Autone, he was our welder, and Byron Tuokoi, he ran the water truck. Luke did bring in one employee of his own, and then his two sons, they sat in the truck and watched his work most of the time. And then Luke hung out with the chairman in the chairman's office. But we got everything done. Now, the bathroom did not get built, but the slab did get poured, and I believe they turned it into like a gazebo. The concession stand did not get built, but I think they went and bought one at like Home Depot or Lowe's, maybe somewhere. The first 2 months, I did get the expenditure reports as well as the bank statements. And Mr. Yeago received $13,500 in each check to pay for these five employees, which came up to $960 a piece, which is $4,800. And I have no idea where the remainder of the money went. I don't know. That would be something that an audit could tell. But after 2 months, I was completely cut off from any expenditures, any knowledge of where the money was going. I had no idea. We did not get to build the roads that was going to keep transportation open because we had to build the power grounds. But the county was not able to build the roads because they did not have the equipment or the manpower to maintain their own roads as well as take on a new one. They were really dependent on us. So they contracted out to someone else. And meanwhile, I believe it was on July the 7th, after everything was over, we were all laid off. And so the transportation was no longer, I believe, I'm told that it's been started or they hired a director. Now before, I was only placed as a temporary acting director. I was actually hired as the maintenance director. So I was not moved back into my original status. In between what they done, they hired a director while they already had a director. Rather than putting me on full time, they actually had two directors, so they just terminated me. So that is one of the lawsuits that I have against the tribe when we do start back up and get a judicial system.
Steve.
The second is, yes.
So how much did they spend on those grounds, and where did the money come from?
Well, the money, from what I understand, the money's coming from the casino. And I was told they when I got reprimanded, I was told we had $50,000 coming from the casino. My bid was $58,200. And, of course, I told them, I can cut corners. Rather than putting 4 inches of gravel down, I can make it two. We can not put as much sod to take out that $8,200. But they decided to go with a contractor. And from what I'm understanding right now, we are just from looking at what has been done, and everything that's been paid off, we're closer to, it appears it's closer to $400,000 when I last checked. Of course, the chairman at that time had said it's only going to cost $118,000. The problem with that was the step-by-step process was not taken of putting getting the money from the BIA. The way this is, you first have to put the project on the inventory list. From the inventory list, it's put onto a TIP. From the TIP, you then get with the BIA, tell them what your intentions are, that you want to build this certain roads, and then the tribe assumes the cost, and then they turn around and you can do a reimbursement. None of the step-by-step process was taken. So, of course, the tribe had to absorb all the costs. Now, whether the tax department or the casino paid the cost, I have no idea. But we did have, you know, of course, we had rented a steel wheel from United Rental. Of course, Western Aggregate, King Saud, all the electric poles put up, and they did rent my tractor, my box blade, and my brush hog to, you know, keep the grounds done. I've never seen a cent. They promised me they was going to pay me. I've never seen a cent to this day. And of course, there again, that's another lawsuit that I will have against Luke Yeago for, I just wanted to pay up. He's, you know, it's one of those deals where I was told that the tribe paid him. He needed to pay me. I there's no way that I can get a hold of him.
Hey, Steve.
Of course, he won't answer my calls.
Steve.
Yes.
Is it true that, or is it possible that federal funds were diverted from their intended purpose and used to finish the dance grounds?
I have no idea if there was any federal funds used. I wouldn't know that. And, you know, I would suggest that the Kiowa people do an audit on the dance ground to find out where exactly these funds came from and why the cost was so expensive when the transportation department could have done it for $58,200 and had a full running bathroom, and, you know, concession stand, speaker stand, everything. But, you know, we have no idea. I mean, it appears there are some things that were going on. Now, I do understand that that this Palo Grounds was used for campaign gimmick, and I only heard that through the grapevine, because a former tribal administrator was bragging that that was all his idea and that the chairman and vice chairman now would not have gotten elected if it wasn't for him. And, you know, so it's like, well, the way I look at it, I care less who wants to take credit for it. The fact of the matter is the Kiowa tribe has the dance ground that we have been wanting. And so we don't really care who's going to take credit for it. We know who built it. We know everyone that was involved with putting everything together. And so, you know, we had to use my transit level to shoot the grade. We were the engineers on the project and we were the operators. So I have no idea. I cannot tell you what Luke Yeago did other than build a concession stand or buy one from Home Depot. I do not know, but the chairman did come up and use that as a campaign gimmick. And there again, you know, they bragged that, you know, this is how we're going to get the chairman voted in. And so I think it was deceiving to the Kiowa people to actually do that. But nevertheless, it's water under the bridge. No use crying over spilt milk. We got our dance ground, and that is all we wanted. But, you know, how it happened and how it came about and the money, the Kiowa tribe's money that was used, I think the people have a right to know. And I hope someone will take the lead in doing an audit just to find out where this money went, how much was actually spent, and why this individual contractor got paid so much to do nothing.
So, Steve, in closing, and we're running out of time here, is there anything else that you'd like to tell the people about that project or anything in general?
Actually, we did this project with a good heart. The first thing we did before we did anything, we took Mr. Joe Fish DuPont to the project. He prayed over it. And, of course, that was first and foremost that we done. And of course, that came out in the newspaper, and it shows Joe Fish standing, praying with the road grader making its first cut on what is now the center of the powwow grounds. So we actually feel like we did what we are right because we included the creator first. And so regardless of who wants to tell lies and, use this for personal gain, we really don't care. We have our dance ground, and that's all that matters.
All right, Stephen, thank you.
And I do Steve, want to say yes. Thank you to all these employees, Jackie, Ace Yellowhair, Von Auton, Brian Auton, and Brian Toyokoya, and, of course, the transportation department. They did an outstanding job. You can look at this powwow grounds, and you can thank these guys because they are the ones that actually built it. I think there was two guys sitting in the truck watching this. I think they were Luke Yeagle's sons. I'm not sure. But nevertheless, it's done, and we are grateful.
All right, Steve, we may have you come on the show later this year, but I want to thank you for taking time to come.
I would love to, and of course, I did make a file. Whenever they do have an audit, hopefully they will.
Hold on to that file.
I make copies of all expenditure reports as well as bank statements to show what I'm telling is true.
I'm sure someday that somebody will want that file, so you hold on to tight. So anyway, thank you for coming on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So, Mary Helen, I'm certain, on any of these budgets that we voted on, I never did see an expenditure for the dance ground. Did you see that on any budget that we voted in?
Nope.
So that would mean that if they did spend money on there, that means they spent it
unapproved.
Unapproved budget, and I think that's illegal.
Yes, because even if the tribal funds are used and they are not grant money or federal money, we still have to follow the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, regulations when spending our money.
That's right. And I know that recently that we've seen a lot of other things pop up in front of us that were unauthorized expenditures by the tribe. Mm-hmm. And we'll be hearing more about that later. Next, why don't we talk about the KIC meeting? Seems to be a big topic of discussion. And Jacob and Anita, you can feel free to chime in here. I know that recently our KIC coordinator had a meeting with the chairman, and the chairman threw a tantrum and threw Stephen out of the office and shut off his phone. And so the chairman is not really in charge of the KIC at all. And it's the opinion of this radio station and the people in this, the people of Kiowas for a Better Future, that that the KIC can have their meeting, and the chairman doesn't have any say-so about it at all. I know that funds were allocated in last year's budget, and that money better be there unless they spend it on something, which they're not supposed to do. Jacob, do you have anything that you'd like to talk about on this topic?
Really, the action that the chairman wanted to take in order to replace Mr. Smith is unconstitutional. He has no role to play in the business of the KIC, only to accept those who would like to be nominated and voted on by the whole KIC. That is the only role he plays. And he has tried to usurp the legitimacy of the KIC and trying to maneuver in order to get things done in an illegal manner, and that he should stop. We're hopeful that things will work out, that we will be able to schedule a meeting in the very near future and to hear the resolutions that have been presented. And the question is where we'll be able to meet. So I look forward to being able to finalize those. Right now, we're enjoying the fact that the executive branch's budget proposal was defeated last weekend.
Anita, you want to talk about the KIC meeting any before we turn it over to you guys for your legislative update?
I would just say that the KIC meeting is needed, but we need to stick with allowing the KIC coordinator at this time, Mr. Steve Smith, to submit a request for a special meeting, or because the deadline for the annual meeting is gone, it's come and gone. So you'll have to submit this is my own opinion, you'll have to submit a request to the legislature for to schedule a special meeting. And in that letter of submission, he knows the Constitution pretty good. He can see that he can request what is to go on at that meeting, the agenda items that he puts on that request for special meeting will be the agenda items that are taken care of at that meeting. And I know the main one would be his 2 years are up, and so we need to vote on a KIC coordinator.
Yes, ma'am.
So that would be one of the big items. And that's about it for me to say. I know that I agree with Jacob that the chairman's role is to advertise and take the applications and publish those applications that he receives so that the people can see who's applying. And then once they get to the meeting, they have an opportunity to vote on who they choose as a coordinator. And that's about it for me as far as the KIC meeting is concerned.
All righty. Thanks, Anita.
Also, don't forget the 23 resolutions that have already been submitted. And those must be read, presented, discussed, and voted on at this KIC meeting.
Well, so, that's totally up to the coordinator and what the coordinator puts on the specially called meeting agenda.
Okay. So, you know, one thing that's confusing to me is how someone could so utterly confuse what it says in the Constitution about the chairman's role in the KIC meeting process. He is to accept the nominations and forward those to the coordinator so that the KIC can vote on them. I don't see how anyone could interpret it that I will choose the KIC nominee and I will forward it to the legislator for confirmation. That's just, I think the word is delusional. Would you call that delusional,
yeah,
Mary Helen? Yeah, delusional is the word I come. All right, so let's go ahead and move on to the legislative update. And so, Jacob and Anita, you've got the floor. Go ahead.
I mentioned earlier that we were pleased that the executive branch's budget was voted down because we felt that the salary increases that were a part of the budget were exorbitant and unnecessary. And so we will look to finalizing a draft. In my opinion, I think the legislature needs to wait till we get figures from the first round of funding so that we can incorporate those into a budget proposal. And I think that would be critical for us to appropriate as much as the budget, as much as the funding as possible, so that we won't have these opportunities for the appearance of mishandling or misappropriating any of the funding available. And for those who haven't heard, we believe, several of us believe, that the guidelines will allow for individual household payments. And so I know that's a relief to many who have struggled with the challenges this past year of the pandemic. In the aftereffects of what They have, many have helped. That is relatively good news, although it will be a headache again for the tribe to administer. But that's the role that they play and the job they signed on to. Hopefully we'll be able to assist them by designing or creating a budget line item to address that. And that, in my opinion, that wouldn't be the best approach for us to take, but that will take our body meeting and deciding that. Anita?
Yes, this past few days ago, we were privileged to take part or listen in on a what was called the U.S. Department of Treasury Tribal Government Allocation Methodology and Payments. It was a Zoom meeting, and there were, the last count I heard was 580 tribes that were listening in or participating in that Zoom meeting. So it was quite a Zoom presentation, and it was quite informative. This is the first time we've had a chance as legislators to listen in on any information about the allocations, the $20 billion that is allocated to tribes in the United States and Alaska. There was pretty specific things, and one of the things I just wanted to share with the people was that there's some dates that are very important to us, and it's the dates of deadlines, and the deadlines for submission of the first allocation of money is May the 24th. And it's, you submit it through the main important thing is there is a point of contact, a point of contact for the Kiowa tribe. Now, who that is, we have not been informed as to who that is. So we don't know who that is. It's either the chairman, the vice chairman, or we don't have an executive director right now. That's another piece of news. But or the treasurer, who is responsible for all tribal funds. And I would guess that's who is our point of contact, but I don't know. So, but the point of contact is the person in the tribal government that would be designated to for all the online submissions and that would receive the status updates for the tribe from the Department of Treasury. And the deadline to send in your information, documentation into that portal is May the 24th, 2021 at 11:59 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. The point of contact will receive information regarding the timing and the amount of the first payment. And when we were on that call, the lady that was hosting that, she had a message that a tribe had that day right then had received their first check. They had already submitted their data, and it takes about 4 to 5 days for the Treasury people to go through your information and then release your money. And so a tribe has already received their first check. The second deadline is the deadline for confirming or amending a tribal government's 2019 employment numbers is June the 7th, 2021 at 11:59 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If a tribal government does not confirm or amend employment numbers by the deadline, the tribal government will not be eligible to receive a share of the employment allocation. There's two payments. After the initial payment, there are two running payments after that. So it says, following the June 7th deadline, Treasury will calculate each tribal government's pro rata share of the employment allocation for those tribal governments that confirm or submitted amended employment numbers. In mid-June, Treasury will communicate to tribal governments the amount of their portion of the employment allocation and the anticipated date for the second payment. So there's going to be two payments, and we should know what those payments are if our executive branch, whoever our point of contact is, gets that information into the Treasury on time. Legislature does not know who that is or what the data is. All that data is with the executive branch. And I want to make that clear to the Kiowa tribe. Legislature is not responsible for that. All that data is with the executive branch. The payment schedule is Treasury will make two payments to eligible tribal governments. The initial payment, including an equal allocation for each tribal government from the $1 billion and the tribal government's pro rata share of the 65% of $19 billion based on tribal enrollment. The second payment will include the tribal government's pro rata share of the remaining 35% of the $19 billion based on tribal employment. And that's that last part. We should know something by mid-June on the second check. Some of the things that we're going to be, what the Treasurer is going to, part of the things they want to do, want us to do, the Treasurer will presume the following additional activities are eligible uses when provided to tribal governments. There's four of them. Addressing health disparities. Y'all know that we're at the end of the line when it comes to health care. Investing in housing and neighborhoods. Addressing educational disparities. You know how our children are pretty much they're not at the top of the class all the time because of, you know, they don't get good education. And promoting healthy childhood environments. As far as supporting the public health response, this funding may be used to meet and address emergent public health needs, COVID-19 mitigations and containment, medical expenses, behavioral health care. And I thought that was very important because we have a lot of grief. We need some good grief counseling. We have had a lot of grief going on this past year, and we're still going through it. So we're in dire need of people that can do grief counseling for our tribe to help us, to help our children, help our families to get through what we've just been through, devastation. And public health and safety staff. The other thing is addressing negative economic impacts. Tribal governments may use these funds to respond to the negative economic impacts of the COVID-19 public health emergency. And that's workers and families, assistance to unemployed workers and job training, food, housing, cash, and other assistance to households, survivors' benefits for family members of COVID-19 victims, small businesses, loans and grants to mitigate financial hardships, loans and grants and in-kind assistance to implement COVID-19 prevention and mitigation tactics, technical assistance, public sector, rehire staff, replenish unemployment insurance funds, administer economic relief programs, impact industry, tourism, travel, and hospitality sectors, including tribal development districts, other similarly affected sectors. You know, our people that do crafts and all that, they've been out of work all the whole year. we couldn't meet. And I've already gone over the deadlines for submission of those. So that's in a brief thumbnail thing. It's a big document, but this is what I can give you as far as information is concerned.
One additional funding we will receive is every federally recognized tribe will receive $1.7 million, and that's already begun, the distribution of that.
One of the things that we need to adjust, Dick talked about the budget. I just got a call before I came on from a legislator, and we have already, you know, been working on our budget, but we had received a memo, and I can't remember, it was from our attorney. And he said that the chairman's budget had contained an error from the casino. It was a $6 million error.
What a shock.
And so we have to adjust our budget because our budget is based on that revenue that we got from the chairman. And if the chairman's budget contained a $6 million error in his revenue, that's the same revenue that we're dealing with. So that's a question that has to come up before our legislative group and say, Casino, where's that $6 million? Where's the error at? We need to question that. Where's the error? Because obviously it's been told to the executive bunch, but they haven't told us. I mean, they just gave our attorney that information, but he passed it on to us. So we're in the dark.
That's something we certainly need to look at. All right, so we're running to a close on the show. Real quick, Kiowa Talk is sad to announce the passing of Cindy Hughes on Wednesday, May 19th. Please keep the family in your thoughts and prayers. Raymond Tongema will be our Kiowa elder next week. Everyone, please get vaccinated. Please contact your closest IHS clinic to find out how. You can reach the Carnegie Clinic at 580-654-2533. Lawton can be reached at 580-354-5000. And the Anadarko Clinic is 247-7900. Today is the 66th birthday powwow for Daryl Cable Sr.
It's going to be at the Tadua Nipa Land, 4 miles at Mears Porter Hill Road in Elgin. The head afternoon singer is Keith Sapita. Head evening singer, Skylar Claremont. Head man dancer, Michael Roberts. Head lady, Wilnetta Suki Manessi. Sorry. MCs, R.G. Harris, J.R. Ross, Arena Director Bruce Nakoni, and James Parker, special guests, Cabo Gore Clan, Comanche War Dance Society, Orenzo Snyder Family. 1 to 5:30, Gore Supper, 6 to 11, War Dance. Thank you.
All right. And tomorrow is the Oklahoma City Powwow Club Spring Benefit at Indian Hills, Sunday, May 23rd from 1 to 10. Eugene Black Bear is the MC. Head singer is Robert Tejano. We hope to see everybody there. It should be a packed event. We'd like to thank all of our special guests for speaking today and all of the Koigu people for tuning into our program on KACO New Country 98.5. Please pray for the Kiowa people, and as J.T. Goombay would say, Goombay for now.
The previous was a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Moman Media management and staff.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man, your worst man, you, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's 7 members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the 1 in 3 could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
Now I'm, trying to get better, stronger than ever.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.